Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Impact Factor. I am your host, Katie Van Aken, and this week's episode is a recent graduate with his PhD from UPenn, and he has a really interesting story, and I really hope you enjoy it. So, without further ado, here is Marshall Lugie, PhD. So, Marshall, tell me, let's go back to the beginning of time. No, let's go back to, like, I guess let's start in your undergrad. So tell me about your undergrad major, your program, and, you know, what you were planning to do with your life at that point, if you know.
Yeah. So I went to undergrad at the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. And I knew absolutely nothing going in. I knew I wanted to do pre-med. So I was like, I'll do pre-med. And I was kind of given, like, advised that I shouldn't be a science major just because it actually looks better for pre-med. Like, if I'm able to do all the science requirements and do something else. So I was actually a music major for the first year. And so I took, like, all music major classes and then met with my advisor again. And they were like, yeah, you're not going to fulfill any of the pre-med requirements. So, yeah. And they were like, we didn't really plan this that well. And I was like, oh, come on. Are you kidding me, man? Like, so I had to drop, and there wasn't a music minor either. Like, so I couldn't even use any of those. So then I ended up just switching to chemistry because I had fortunately taken some chemistry classes. So it was very much like just chemistry was because that was probably the only major that I could do and still do pre-med.
Okay. And graduate, like, 4 years.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because in high school, I took APs, but I took like AP bio and I took like AP like environmental science and AP psychology, and the way Holy Cross worked was none of those transferred because I still had to take them for pre-med. So they were like, yeah, you have to take that here to fulfill the pre-med requirements so your APs don't transfer.
Damn.
So if someone had told me to take like AP English or, you know, AP history so that I wouldn't have to take Buddhism or metaphysics in undergrad, then that would have been great. But so I switched to chemistry, and I mean, I got a C in high school chemistry, which is kind of ironic that ended up being my major and ended up getting my PhD in that. But and then I guess I was pre-med all the way until senior year. And then a week before my MCAT, and this was actually like after the term ended, I was like set to take the MCAT. I took a bunch of practice exams. I took like a practice real MCAT, and then like I kind of was just like, yeah, I don't want to do pre-med. Like I hate this. And so I walked into my advisor's office, or my like undergrad lab advisor, and I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna go to grad school. And she's like, well, you missed every application, so you have to take a year off now. But she had a lot of patience with me, and like I really appreciate that in hindsight. So I had a really like weird path to grad school.
But you know, all of those like weird turns, like they're why you are where you are today, right? Which is so crazy. And like those mentors in our lives are also like so important to our path, which is crazy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My undergraduate mentor was, she was the best. Like I think Holy Cross was so important because it was a PUI, and which is just like the private undergraduate institution. Yeah. And it wasn't a big university. And if I had gone to a big university, I just would have been funneled into the med school like path. And with Holy Cross, it was kind of like, you know, everyone makes their own path, everyone does their own thing. And then my advisor, when I wanted to do research, he literally was in the lab that summer training me in organic chemistry, like running reactions with me, showing me how to do these things. And even at Penn for grad school, like that's something you don't get. Like you don't get a
Yeah.
professor, someone who's been in the field for, 8, 10 years already, like hands-on training you, giving you their skills. So I think that was super valuable.
That was going to be my next question, is if you had research experience in undergrad. So it sounds like you did for a summer or more than that.
So it's like a fairly traditional, like if you want to join a lab at Holy Cross, you join after your I want to say it was freshman year. So actually I think it was sophomore year. You join after your sophomore year, and then you basically pick a lab, pick your top like five labs. You join whichever professor has room, and usually you've built up like a rapport with some professor beforehand, and you're not just blind picking a lab.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like grad school in that sense, right?
Yeah.
For picking labs and stuff. And my professor, she was my organic chemistry professor for Orgo 1 and Orgo 2, and I was like, I really liked your class. I liked the way you taught, and so I joined. And then the way it works is you do summer research, and it's fully funded by the school that first summer for between sophomore and junior year. So I did that summer research with a bunch of my friends. We got to live in like senior housing, which was pretty
Oh,
awesome. So there was
yeah.
like AC and things like that that
Prime.
are pretty common, but not always in college.
Yes,
And
yes.
so we lived in the dorm this summer. I lived with like three of my really good friends, like and that was just an awesome summer. It was like wake up, you walk 2 minutes to lab, and my professor's there to train me. Like I set up my reactions, like I learned a lot. And then after that, undergraduate research just continued on. It was like I took it as credit, so it was like you keep doing research in lab. And then you can start to dig more into the project. Like the first summer is really just like learning everything there is to know about what your professor can teach you. And then after that, you're kind of on your own in the lab. But I would say that first summer was really all you need to get situated
Yeah.
with the like training that we were given. But then yeah, I did that both junior year and senior year. I didn't do another summer. I did another research. I did like a different research.
Like an REU?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like an RU. But it was a fellowship through the American Cancer Society. So I went to Mass General Hospital in Boston. They have a cancer center in Charlestown. So ac across the Charles River from Boston. I worked in it was actually I had never taken a bio class at this point.
Yeah.
So I had only taken chemistry classes. And I was like I was kind of weird. I like left all my bio classes till senior year in undergrad.
Okay.
And I joined a lab, and it was a yeast biology lab between junior and senior year. I had not taken I had taken AP bio in high school. I had not taken a single bio class, and I joined a yeast biology lab. And the talk of the time was like CRISPR and like
Yep.
all of this stuff. And so I come in, and they're all like, "Oh yeah, we're like, we're CRISPR knocking out like all these genes in yeast, and we're
Yeah.
doing all this." And I'm like, "I have no idea what the hell you're talking about." Like, I
English,
have no
please.
clue.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're talking about, and they're trying to, even then after someone, like one of the postdocs sat me down and like explained everything and how it worked and what they were doing. I was like, I still have no idea what you're talking about. I haven't taken a bio class. And so that was like kind of like exposure to everything I needed to learn still in
Yeah.
biology. Fortunately, I was able to take those classes the next year and learn about some of that stuff. But that summer it was kind of like trial by like fire, just thrown into the lab, and it was like, okay, now you're just doing all these yeast experiments. And I was like, PCR, like cloning, like
Yep.
no idea what's going on here.
Yep.
But I'm my boss again, I've been very fortunate. Like my PI was amazing there. Mo Modamedi was his name. And he just like came in, got me acclimated in the lab, set me up with one of the postdocs, and we planned an experiment that was actually like kind of tangible to someone who hadn't really done any biology research. It was just like a long-term growth experiment. Basically, take these yeast and grow them for the entire summer. And we had removed like certain genes, and we wanted to see what other mutations they pick up in a certain part of the genome, like over time. And so I got exposure to basically like, passaging these yeast and taking aliquots out, and then sending them off for like RNA-seq and things like that, that we could then look at. And it was good experience, I'll say. Like I got also got experience in like contamination at this point in my science career, where it was like and just good technique was something that was huge about it. But yeah, that was like my other experience before going back to Holy Cross for my senior year.
Nice. So, when you had to take this year off, what did you do for that year off?
So let's see. So you're saying the year off between undergrad and
Yeah,
grad school?
because you said, "Oh, I want to go to grad school," but you had missed the
Yeah.
deadlines, right? Was that the, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, that was tough. I applied for like, I don't know, like 60 or 70 jobs, and I was applying to everything. I was applying to like tech jobs in every field, like bio, chemistry. I was applying to be like a field service tech for like instrument companies. I had like some HPLC experience, so I was like, get me in there fixing HPLCs. Like, I'll take that. I applied to a lot of like clinical research jobs too, because I had like all the med school classes. It was like I can pretend like I'm still going to med school and that I need to do like clinical research. And eventually, a contracting company actually reached out to me. It was called Commonwealth Sciences. And basically what they did was they were like, send me your resume. And they went out and they were just, their job is to fill positions for pharmaceutical companies or, companies in Boston, Cambridge area. And they, that next week, like found me a position. It was a contract position, so it's not full time. So I'm like technically not an employee of the company. I'm an employee of Commonwealth Sciences, and I work at the company. But that was like I was doing analytical chemistry. So it was a lot of HPLC and pharmaceutical testing. So it was like late stage pharmaceutical ingredients. It was like looking at how they would break down in your gut, or like the best way to deliver them, like whether it's a capsule or a tablet. And it was actually cool that like I got exposure to that part of pharma that it's like people don't really think about. It's like it actually matters like how hard you press the tablet. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like
The
you have a
engineering
powder.
side of drugs, right?
And so like it was really cool because I'd be in the lab, I'd like actually press tablets and then like basically put them in a gastric media, which is just like pH, like low pH, like juice, and like track how long it takes for the drug to release, and be absorbed or into the or solubilized in the media. And it was like a lot of that, a lot of like physical characterization. So I got exposure to a lot of different techniques that would turn out not being valuable whatsoever in grad school, except for HPLC, maybe. But
But you knew this was temporary, right? And
yes.
you also actually now saw kind of what industry pharmaceuticals looks like for later in life, maybe.
So I got, and it was a small company. It was a cool company. It was Agios was the name of the company. And I feel like they've grown a lot since. They've had a few like FDA approvals and things like that. And but yeah, and I would say it was really important because I got to talk to a lot of chemists and biologists, analytical chemists, people that were doing the engineering side of things, And this was all before I even applied to grad school.
Yeah.
So I got to hear, like, you know, what was your grad school experience? Like, would you do it again? And I think that was really valuable for applying to schools, picking labs, and figuring out, you know, what I wanted to do with my life.
Nice. Okay, so let's talk about that. So at that point, at the point at which you're applying to grad school, was it, was PhD the goal? And did you know what kind of programs slash research you were looking for?
Yeah, PhD was absolutely the goal.
Okay.
So it was like very quickly I got into pharma, and I was told about this like glass ceiling, right? It was like, if you're bachelor's level or master's level, even, it was like, you're going to hit a point in your career where it's like, there's no really breaking past that.
Yeah.
Because the higher up people are all PhD, and there were like, that's not to like detract from, you know, the bachelor's and master's level people that were there that are doing great work. And there's definitely exceptions to that rule too. There's people who have only have their bachelor's who are up as like directors and stuff in pharma. But it was just the PhD made that easier. And I also just like, I had a sense that I wasn't done. I wanted more of the academic like research experience. And I really loved science. And like, while that job was great, like, I would never, it would be a lot of like working as a tech. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the generations before us, like, were fairly large. And so there's like kind of an abundance of PhD level people who were occupying a lot of those higher roles. So it would be like a fight to get into that space. And at this point, I also wasn't even sure I wanted to go into industry. I was like partially thinking about becoming a professor too. And that's just not even possible to be a professor. Like, and I obviously like had my sights set for, you know, the stars. And I was like, I want to be a professor at an R1 school doing top tier mm-hmm. research. And like, yeah, I had no clue what that entails.
Right.
Like maybe we'll touch on that a bit later, but
you're about to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no clue what that entailed. And so it was like, yeah, like, so I'd say I got into it for that reason. But I think that it doesn't necessarily mean that just cause like my final reason, is not the same, like doesn't mean it wasn't valuable going at all. So, yeah, I think it was a good experience at the pharma company, and I got to meet all these PhDs, and, a couple of them were like, I don't know if I would do the PhD. Yeah.
You still get that around, you know?
Yeah. But there were a lot of people who were very supportive. And I mean, my boss like wrote me recommendations and stuff, and, he was happy to see where I ended up. So I think it was good overall.
So how long were you there before you, or were you applying basically the next round for PhD programs?
Yeah. I was applying almost immediately, I think, when I started. So I started in like June. Mm-hmm. So I had like a little bit of time to kind of plan things out. But then the application process was pretty quick. And I was only there for a year.
Okay.
Yeah, about a year exactly, actually. And so like, I knew kind of going in that this was just a temporary job, and that I wanted to go to grad school. So I didn't sway at all when I saw the industry experience.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, it just added to your preparation, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
So as you're looking for grad school programs, did you have a specific research type of research in mind? Or I think you ended up in biochem. Did I make that up?
Yeah, chemical biology, yeah. So it's like a very subtle distinction. Like I think like biochemistry is very like fundamental, like it's more of a biological endeavor. Whereas what I wanted to do was I wanted chemistry to kind of lead the way. So I wanted to be in a lab. I set like some guidelines for what I wanted to do in a lab. And honestly, if I was looking back on it, I would tell myself, like, don't be so strict with those guidelines. Like, you know less than you think you do. Like, you're not an organic. Like, the guidelines I set for myself was like, I wanted to work in an organic chemistry lab that was also doing biology, but that organic chemistry was at the forefront of the lab. But also that I wasn't going to just do organic chemistry. So it's like I kind of pigeonholed myself
You did, yeah.
right from the get-go. And it was like based on like me thinking like my experience is organic chemistry. Like I like that. I'm interested in that. But at the same time, like I hadn't been exposed to anything else. Like how do I know if I like, something else even more? Like maybe I would like physical chemistry, or maybe I would like instrumental chemistry more than what I'm doing. So I should have given myself like more of a broad field. But anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. Yeah,
That's
so
okay.
I wanted to be in an organic chemistry lab that was doing biology. And so I narrowed it down to a few schools where there were like four or five professors that were doing that type of thing at each school. And then I applied to those schools.
And you ended up at Penn?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And how did Penn work? Did you start? Well, I know the answer to this. So I think what you did was you did some rotations in the beginning of your program.
That was voluntary
Oh, okay.
So it depended on if you were organic or biological chemistry or physical chemistry or what you were doing in the program. Inorganic chemistry is the last one. But the biological students did rotations, but I was actually an organic student.
Okay.
So organic students do not do rotations, because when I started, the organic class load was just like obscene. Like the amount of
Oh, I
classes we were
see.
taking, and the like, I don't want to say they're more difficult than the biological classes, but it was a lot. There were a lot of classes that took a lot of time, like a lot of, you had to study a lot.
So being in the lab at the same, like, in addition to that would have been a lot.
Oh yeah, it would not have been possible, I don't think.
That's
But
interesting.
what I did do was I reached out to a professor, because my contract ended up in like June, and I reached out to a professor and was just like, hey, could I do a rotation in your lab before classes start? Yeah, so David Chenoweth was the professor's name, and I reached out to him. I was like, hey, could I do a rotation? And he was like, sure. We'll start your stipend early. So they started my stipend actually in July, and then I was in his lab for July and August, doing research at Penn. So I did get to do like a little mini rotation, I
Yeah,
guess.
that's cool. What, so tell me about your research in the lab that you ended up in. Or tell me about the lab that you ended up in, I guess.
So, I ended up in James Peterson's lab, which was a chemical biology lab too, but I actually was in another lab. I joined another lab, and ended up switching labs, which was really, really difficult. So I joined a new professor's lab, and just the amount of work and like the output I was seeing, and basically my day to day was just something that was not tenable. I just did not see it being tenable for the entirety of my PhD. And in that time span, like a postdoc left, another grad student in the lab mastered out. And then I was like, I gotta jump ship. And so I took a class with James, who was teaching, and he taught this chemical biology class, and it was just like phenomenal, like amazingly well taught. He went through all of these like cool really cool applications of, it was like applied organic chemistry as well as a bunch of other things, and really summarized them all very well. And the way he taught was just like, was so good that I was like, this guy's brilliant. I have to work for this guy. So when I switched labs, there was like, again, I couldn't, at this point, I did not have any leverage. I was this grad student that was like, either you leave or you join whoever will take you. And so I had to set it. This was kind of, nobody had really done this that much at Penn at the time. So I kind of had to work with the graduate coordinator to set up rotations where I left the lab and I did two like rotations in different labs, with a third one pending the first two. And I had to make sure that the professors would take me. And then I TA'd, even though I wasn't in a lab, to make sure that I would have funding.
Wow.
And it was like this whole process and just trying to find a lab that would take me. And fortunately, I had a friend who was an upper level grad student in James's lab who also advocated for me and was like, listen, like, you should take him. Like, he can help out a lot with this project. And thankfully, James listened to him because his lab is like pretty sought after. He could have easily just said no, like, but yeah, it's like, so I set that up and I ended up in James's lab, and then I guess the rest is history. That was yeah.
But again, like, important people that come into our lives, you know, that friend who advocated for you is hugely important in your story. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what exactly was the research you were working on with James for your dissertation?
Yeah. So I did, very broadly speaking, it was like developing, trying to develop a small molecule radioligand, for neurodegenerative disease. So the idea is, my entire project was focused around neurodegeneration. And so that's like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you know, even like CTE, like these diseases. The way they work is there's proteins in the brain that are disordered, and they can aggregate upon themselves. And whether that comes from something else or whether that's causative, is still hotly debated. Essentially what happens is neurons end up dying, and you see the symptoms of, you know, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and these type of horrible diseases. So the idea was, when these proteins aggregate, they become something that's ordered and something that you can target with small molecules. And so the idea was, and the grad student in the lab who kind of pioneered this was Jack Ferry. He had done a lot of computational modeling to model these disordered proteins. And he was able to identify some small molecules that bound to alpha-synuclein, which was the protein that we were studying, with a very high affinity. And so I was able to come in and work on this project right away. And it was basically making probes to determine, you know, experimentally, where these molecules are binding on alpha-synuclein. And the impetus for this, again, was designing a small molecule that could be given to patients, or not even patients, just be given to people that, you know, maybe didn't exhibit symptoms, but were prone to the disease or something like that. And it would allow for earlier detection of the disease via positron emission tomography. So you essentially turn the molecule into a radioligand, and you can use positron emission tomography or PET to detect these plaques. And so you, like a brain that has Alzheimer's or a brain that has Parkinson's, like, should light up in these scans. So the idea is, like, if you can diagnose it, you can treat it earlier, and you can prevent, hopefully, some of the problems associated with the disease. So I'll say that was like project number one. And then I kind of went off the rails. So like, James gave me a lot of slack and like things that I could work on. And so I did a lot of organic synthesis. I made these photo cross linkers to identify binding sites in alpha-synuclein for these molecules, and that was like the main project. But then I did like I made fluorescent molecules to look at, you know, how these molecules are binding and if they light up like fluorescently. I did like neuronal cell culture looking at different preparations of alpha-synuclein and how it leads to pathology in neurons. I did some new chemistry, like I did some high throughput experimentation to develop new organic reactions to make some of these probes. And these are all projects that it was just like, you know, I had an idea and I would go to James and James would be like, yeah, sure, give it a shot.
Yeah.
So he was super great about that, I think. And ultimately, like, I think that I probably should have focused a little bit more on one thing, and you know, that would have led to an earlier publication, I guess. But I mean, I learned a lot doing all the different things, and I value the skills that I gained from all of those things. So I wouldn't do it any other way, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things about research is it can be personalized to like your type of learning style too. Like I'm the same way where I was just doing like 80 different things at once because I had the flexibility to do so. Whereas in a non sort of research environment, even in like a non-academic environment, you know, you're sort of only allowed to focus on one thing, you know? Yeah.
And I think it's really nice that I had a professor that was, you know, okay with that. 'Cause there are definitely professors who are like, if you work on something other than, you know, that experiment you're supposed to be working on, it's like, how dare you? Like, how dare you? Like, this is directly like going against what I'm telling you to do by, and even if you do the thing that they want you to do, like if you do something else on the side, but still doing, you know, whatever they want you to do, then like they still get mad because it's like you're not focusing 100% of your attention on that. So James wasn't like that. He gave me enough slack to, you know, kind of get myself in trouble sometimes. Go down little rabbit holes of research. But I definitely value it because it allowed me to learn that I
To
didn't know
fail.
it. I didn't know everything. Yeah, I wasn't as good as I thought I was. Like, and that was very valuable.
So you have grad excuse me, you have graduated, correct? So I tell me what you're doing now, but also how related is it to what you did with in James's lab?
Yeah, oh my God, it's the same. It's so fun. I
Really?
got yeah. Yeah, it's actually kind of scary how similar it is. But like I don't think I would have gotten the job otherwise, if that
Sure.
makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, so I'm working at a company, a pharmaceutical company called Biogen. So you may or may not have heard about them. They just came out or had FDA approved the first like Alzheimer's drug, first in class, and it clears like A beta plaques in the brain. And it was actually very, very divisive. Like it was very like it was kind of a hot topic because the FDA panel that approved it said that we shouldn't approve this antibody.
Oh,
Yeah.
interesting.
And the FDA was like, it's first in class. No one else has done this. So they approved it anyway. And everyone was up in arms about it. Turns out Biogen had another one on the back burner that now is like looking pretty good, for all intents and purposes. But yeah, so they're working in neurodegenerative disease. And I'm working in medicinal chemistry. So it's again, neurodegenerative disease, but in a small molecule context. And the stuff I'm doing, which is like target identification and kind of looking at off targets and doing some chemical biology, like chemical proteomics, same exact thing I did in James's lab. So I think that basically they were I mean, I applied to the job because it fit pretty well with my skill set. And to be honest, I don't think I was getting another job. But yeah, I got very, very lucky. And it's like a fellowship, so it more closely aligns with a postdoc. But the position is full time. Like I get, all the benefits and stuff like that. So I'm not like a contractor like I was before grad school. But it is like kind of postdoc-y, if that makes sense.
Are you in the lab every day? Like, is that pretty much your day-to-day effort is bench work?
So it's been making molecules. Yeah, it's funny because it's like that's what I did at the beginning of my PhD, and then it kind of swung more towards biology, and then I did more biology, and now I'm starting at Biogen, and it's gone. It's like it reset. It's like now I'm back in the lab making molecules, like doing a lot of organic chemistry. And eventually once the molecules are made, then it will swing back into biology. And so I have two bosses. Well, basically everyone's my boss because I'm like a postdoc in the group. But I have like two direct reports, one direct report in medicinal chemistry, who I got lucky again. Like my bosses are great. And they've been super helpful in like getting all the softwares and I don't there's not it's been tough because I have to kind of force myself to be like it's okay that things aren't getting done right away. You know what I mean? Like in academia, if there was something holding you up that was out of your control, the thing what they teach you to do is like find a way around it, right? It's like this thing, you think this thing's out of your control. It's not. Like find a different way of doing it that allows it to be in your control. Whether that's like, you're out of a chemical or something. Go to every lab and ask everybody if they have this chemical. And like, if not, find a different way to do the thing that you want to do. With industry, the mindset is more like, okay, to use the same example, you're out of a chemical. Buy it. You can wait 2 days. And then run the reaction. It's not, the reaction's not going anywhere. Like, just buy it, it'll get placed right away, and then
Do something else in the
work on other
meantime.
stuff. Yeah, work on other stuff in the meantime. It's like a totally different mindset, and it's not one that I've adjusted to yet. Like, I've only
You've
been
only
there
been there
for
a
a
few
month.
weeks. Yeah, a month.
So it's like I'll kind of, I don't know, my boss probably thinks I'm crazy because I'm like, I need to do this thing right now. Like
I need this
I can't
chemical.
wait. Yes, I need this chemical. I can't do my chemistry. I need this chemical. Be like, relax. Like it's okay. You can like work on some notebook stuff. Like you don't have to be freaking out about this. It's not grad school anymore. So I think it'll take me honestly, like probably a couple months or so before that kind of sets in and I start to hit my stride and be like, okay, things don't need to get done yesterday. Like
And then
it's a
you become
different time.
a chill industry researcher, where it's like, it'll get done when it gets done,
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it's been a good transition. I would say James prepared me pretty well for industry. And again, like I said, I got lucky. Like your bosses matter too.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to hearing more as you are there for longer and sort of find your way in the industry. Maybe we'll do a follow-up at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I think I, covered most of my questions. Oh, before I jump into the main questions I want to ask, so now that you're a working person, which pr with presumably a more of a work-life balance, or at least a 9-to-5 vibe, have you explored other hobbies in your life, or what else do you do for fun?
Yeah, so I'm still getting settled. Like, I don't know if you can't really see my apartment. There's like boxes everywhere. So I'm still getting settled in, but I am looking forward to doing more stuff. I did in grad school, I did like a pottery class. So I want to get back into that. And then, yeah, I guess it's just been nice knowing that I now have the time to do those type of things. Like to come home and like I still have the and I like have the energy to, work out or go to the gym, something like that. Whereas in grad school, it was like coming home, it was just like you feel so I don't know, like
Drained.
defeated and
Yeah.
but yeah, and I moved back to Massachusetts and like all of a bunch of my friends and family are here. So like
Nice.
every day it's like even this week it was like dinner with friends,
Yeah.
dinner with friends tomorrow, like golf last weekend, like these things that just never happened. And it was I was lucky if that happened once every 6 months in grad school.
Yeah.
Whereas
Yeah.
here it's like I get to see my family and I get to see like friends from around here more often.
Yeah. And you have the time to spend with them, which is nice.
Yes,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah.
Very cool. All right, so let's well, anything I missed that you wanted to chat about, or I can just jump into those three questions.
Yeah, let's hit the questions. Let's see what,
Okay.
and maybe more stuff will pop into my
We'll
head when
bubble
I,
up. Yeah, of
yeah.
course.
Yeah.
So first I want to ask you, looking back on your experience, what was something challenging you faced at some point during your PhD journey?
Yeah. So we touched on this. I think that the toughest thing that happened during my PhD was switching labs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really hard. And it was like I really felt like I was never going to be successful at that point. It was like I'm a year behind.
Nobody wants
Just got
me.
yeah, no nobody wants me. Like a few professors at that point had said absolutely not, you should just leave the program.
Wow.
And it was like this is awful.
Yeah.
And so it was like just week after week of just like sleepless night, like planning, trying to figure it out, like what's going on here. And at this point I was still I also didn't want to leave my lab until I had like some sort of plan in place.
Sure.
And I mean that was just so stressful. And I think that like I don't think I could have lasted in that my
Yeah.
first lab for my PhD. I would have mastered out, or I would have even just left like the program.
Yeah.
So
Well, that
I
means that the stress of switching was worth it, right? Because
yeah.
It was a short period of uncertainty that probably protected you from, whatever you just said,
Yeah. And before me, like I was really surprised, like no one had really switched labs before.
Yeah.
Like people mastered out or people left the program. And
Yep.
there was no real system in place to help students who were going through this. Like, and so I worked really closely with the graduate coordinator at the time, who was like, no, this is like brand new terrain here. Like,
Yeah.
and so they actually made kind of a little like step-by-step guide to like if you're switching labs, like these are the steps you go to. And since then, every year, like one or two students have switched labs. So they have like more of a protocol in place for that now. And so like at least hopefully, like I tell myself, like hopefully it was helpful to people like other than myself in that sense.
Yeah.
That they have more of a regimented like plan for people who want to switch groups now.
Yeah, I've talked to a few people on the show who switched labs, and they all similarly, say that it was a hard process. And I think it just is, because you don't really have an ally in the lab that you're leaving or in the lab that you're joining, because that doesn't exist yet, And so the department really becomes, the the helper in that sense. So it's great that I that to hear that that they've sort of focused on that and build a program around it.
Yeah. So I think that was by far and away the hardest part of grad school. And then, I mean, COVID was up there too, but like that's everyone, man. It's like,
true.
Everybody dealt with COVID and not everyone switched labs. So,
well, great. So my next question is, looking back on it, what advice would you give to yourself, when you were first starting out?
Oh my God. How much longer do we have? the list is endless. No, I think it's probably like, you know what the Dunning-Kruger effect is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I would say just be aware of that. just know what that is. No, cause I came in and like, I thought I was like, I know organic chemistry. Like I have to join an organic chemistry lab. Otherwise, like I won't be able to function. Like, it's like, no, you know nothing. Like you've done undergrad chemistry and you had a little bit of a stint in industry that doing totally unrelated. You know nothing. Like, and even after you take all those classes, it's like, great. Now you have a practical knowledge for like a year and a half while you retain that information.
Yeah.
But,
and it's like, still just a baseline, right? Because it's what everybody else knows. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you know how to run, you know, 50 different types of cross couplings now. Good luck running those in the lab.
Yeah.
Because you have no practical way of applying that information. Like, you need someone to train you. You need someone to show you what to do. And even then, it's like, there's little things that it's like little like tricks of the trade and I guess like little voodoo that make things work.
Yeah.
And chemistry that like you just don't know, and that fifth year grad student knows. And like, yeah, maybe that fifth year grad student has forgotten, you know, 25 of those of the 50 coupling reactions or whatever, but they can run every single one of them if they needed to.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like take a step back, you know, you're not going to get a science paper like
right
after in the first year, like, yeah. Cool it and just soak it in, like work on a project, do what your professor tells you and like, and try and make some headway and learn like, to start off with, like that would be the biggest advice I could give myself.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I love the concept of like, just like, let the science come to you, like soak it all in. Cause it's all around you and it's kind of a great experience and environment to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great advice.
Yeah.
Okay, last question is, I know this wasn't long ago for you, but do you have like a good memory or story from your program that you would like to share?
Yeah, so it's kind of a cop out of an answer, but I think that I'm a people person. Like, I love hanging out with people and like doing things. And I think that I was blessed to have a lab that was so like, they were people that you could, you know, have a drink with after lab. Mm-hmm. And like, it was great. And that was partially on James for recruiting, you know, decent people.
Yep.
But, the friends that I made in that lab, it was like, the things that we did outside of lab, I think was what made the lab like what it was. So we built this environment of where like you could really come in and do work and prosper. And like, so, like Kristen and Chloe were two of my best friends in the lab. And like, we would hang out outside the lab all the time. And, you know, whether it was just like karaoke or playing like True American, or like drinking games like with each other, like it was so much fun. And like I think that those interactions with people, like also like second piece of advice, like think about the lab environment too you're joining.
Yeah.
Like don't join a lab that's like, you know, you come in at 8, you leave at 8, you like the people don't talk to each other while they're there or outside of lab, like everybody does their own thing. Like, I mean, if that's what you like,
Right.
all the power to
But
you.
if you're a people person, make sure there are people there that you can talk to,
Yes.
right?
Yes. And even if you're not a people person, sometimes people just need support, even if they don't think they do. Like, sometimes you just need support from people. And so having some good people in lab that you can, even just bounce ideas off of and complain to, like,
Yeah.
I think that that's super
So true.
important. Yeah.
So true. Yeah, that's great. I love hearing people say that because one, it triggers like my own sentimental feelings about my lab and my friends, but also, it's looking back on it, like there are positive experiences like that mixed in with some of the traumatic ones. But it's always good to kind of revisit them.
And it keeps you sane. Like, those are the experiences that that allowed me to make it through grad school, I think. With if those like if I hadn't had them, like I don't think I would have. Even though I was in a good lab, I was making good progress on my research, like I personally don't think I would have made it through grad school without some people to support me.
Aw.
Yeah.
Well, if they're listening, thank you to those people, right?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Well, Marshall, I don't want to keep you any longer. So, thank you so much for your time, especially as you move home and or move back to your city and start a new job. It was really kind of cool to talk to you in this transition period.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I loved talking about it. Love talking about science. And yeah, and come 18 months, that's the end of my contract at Biogen. If you want to talk
Perfect.
again, yeah, happy
Perfect.
to talk about reapplying to industry positions, which I'm looking forward to.
Great.
Yeah.
It's a date. It would be cool to do that, but yeah, so thanks so much.
Yeah.
How do
All
I
right.
do
Thank
this?
you.
Thanks to Marshall for coming on the show. If you or someone you know wants to be interviewed on Impact Factor, feel free to reach out via Instagram and follow us for updates at @ImpactFactorPod. Thank you all for listening and have a great week.